You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas, the Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont.
Yes. And we're delighted that you are with us tonight, whether you travel with us every week or whether you're tuning in for tonight's special featured guest. This is episode 135. And who is our guest tonight?
Who is our guest? Scott McCray.
Scott McCray is joining us. Hello, Scott.
We see Scott McCray, never heard of him. Never heard of him.
You will after tonight.
Clearly an imposter.
Oh, Scott, we're delighted to have you back with us. Scott,
you know, it dawns on me that I met you both. It's always a delight to see you. I met you both at the Western Writers of America conference last year, and I'm going to be able to see you again in about, I don't know, 3.5 weeks or something,
like
right?
3.5 weeks.
Coming up.
Yes. Yeah. And it was really fun to meet you there. And I remember seeing the book, and one of the books, and we'll talk about it in a moment, but your award-winning finalist, your Spur Award finalist book, I remember seeing it, you know, on display and thinking, a Tom Mix book? Oh my gosh, I got to have that. So you were with us back in, I think, February.
Yes.
Along with Richard Prosh and two other writers. And for that show, we were talking about this great anthology, Through Western Storms. And we're going to talk about your story in this book in just a moment. But I think, Jim, do you want to, shall we start with
Scott's bio?
Scott's bio.
Let's just a little bio here. Scott McCray is a 2024 Western Writers of America Spur Award finalist. The author of 25 Westerns, he has also written novels, short stories, magazine articles, television documentaries, nonfiction books, cookbooks, and even trading cards.
Even trading cards, yeah. Not many people could say that.
You're the first one I've read about here. Yeah. Scott is a frequent talk show guest and lecturer, having appeared twice on WABC TV's Good Morning America and WABC's Morning News, and now a featured guest on Rendezvous with a Writer. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
I saw in your bio that you did a documentary on Dark Shadows.
Yeah, that was so when I was a kid, I mean, a really, really little kid, Dark Shadows was the thing.
Absolutely.
And I would race home from school and watch it. And I always loved it. And somehow I ended up becoming very good friends with the star of the show's agent. Her name is Mary O'Leary. Wonderful lady. And she told me she was putting together a documentary and she wanted to on his life and needed some help thinking it through. So I helped her with that. And then I wrote the narration for the thing. It actually got nominated for a daytime Emmy. It didn't win, sadly, but I would have loved to say I've actually written something that won a daytime Emmy, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, I ran home to watch that every day also.
Yeah, that's why I'm so spooky, you know.
It had a lot of fans.
Oh, that was a great show. Oh, how fun. Now we have a connection to Dark Shadows.
What was the guy's name? Barnaby or something?
Barnabas Collins, and he was played by Jonathan Frid.
Yeah, Jonathan Frid. And was Selby, was David?
David Selby, he was on that show.
Oh, he had blue eyes. Well, we might have had a black and white TV. I didn't.
Okay.
All right. Well, anyway, he made my heart pound as a whatever, however old I was.
Just a baby.
Oh, my gosh. Well, how fun. So let's see. We need to get back on track because we have so much to talk about tonight. So let's see. We just did the bio. Oh, yeah. Okay. So you did just tell us a little bit about our writing career, but why don't you take us through a little bit about how you got started, and then we also want to talk about the story from that.
Sure. I'm an overnight success. I wanted to be a writer when I was in second grade, and I sold my first book when I was 50. So it was just like right overnight. It was a very long, you know, I think lots of people have it in them to be writers, except they don't have the ability to stick it out until we get somewhere. And it does take a long time. So I had wanted to be a writer ever since I was a kid. I spent a little bit of time after college as the most unemployable actor in the entire world. And I was an actor for about 2 years. And when I got hungry, I went into public relations, and I did that forever. And then when I moved to California about 7 years ago, I realized that I was tired of writing about urge urinary incontinence for my clients. And wanted to do what I was born to do, which is write Westerns and thrillers. Yeah. And I woke up one morning, I said, that's it. This is what I'm going to do. And did, about 30 books later, here I am.
Wow. 30 books later with I have a feeling that a lot in the funnel, just waiting to come down and get out on paper.
Yeah. Oh, it's official. I've actually now written more books than I've read.
That's a pretty good line.
He's a comedian.
Yeah, you
know,
good.
He's a comedian. Now we know where the witty banter comes from in his stories. So even though we did talk with you about this back in February, I would love it if you would just give us a little bit. It's such a wonderful story. Hurricane
at Hogs Holler.
Yes, from this anthology. Yes.
So Richard, who by the way is like one of the greatest guys in the world, contacted me and he said he's putting together an anthology of Western stories that had some kind of connection to storms. And they didn't have to be physical storms. They could be emotional storms or, you know, storms where something changes profoundly. And I was always fascinated by Oscar Wilde growing up because I think he's a genuinely funny man who's also a genuinely tragic figure. And I think sometimes we think of him as a tragic figure at the expense of thinking of how funny he was, because he was a gifted comedian and a great comic writer. He also toured the Old West, of course, in the early 1880s, reading poetry to cowboys and miners, for example, in Colorado. And I was wondering, well, how can I write a Western about Oscar Wilde? And so I my story is called Hurricane at Hogs Holler. There are two people arriving on the train at Hogs Holler, Oscar Wilde, the celebrated poet and aesthete, and the town's new doctor, who is a Japanese man. And Wilde is celebrated and embraced, and the doctor is shunned. And Wilde gets hold of this and changes some perceptions with a lot of comedy and a little bit of play acting. And it was a great pleasure to do. And fortunately, it's gotten a lot of good notices in that. So I was delighted to do it.
It's a great story. I really hope that somebody will either write it to be a short play or a radio play.
It's very funny you said it, because I think it'd make a great radio play.
I think it'd make a great radio play. Absolutely.
What was the original inspiration for that story?
Yeah.
I think I thought of that story when I was in high school. But I didn't write it when I was in high school, because that was so long ago, I would have had to chiseled it into a rock. I actually just been percolating in my brain all of these years. And then when Richard gave me the opportunity, I said, oh, well, there it is. It's just been waiting there all of this time. Yeah. It's amazing how often, you know, you just look inside and these things have been waiting there, you know, that have been there and now are just taking you again by surprise.
Yeah.
What are you going next? Potomac?
Heroes.
Heroes, yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about, obviously, Oscar Wilde is someone who got your imagination, but I have a sense that Heroes, you may have some others. And why are they important? How do they inspire you? And why are they important today, Scott? And if so, why?
So I got to tell you about one of my heroes, this guy named Tom Mix. and I've actually written 9 novels about Tom Mix. Tom Mix and the Wild West Christmas is one of them. But I will tell you 2 stories about Tom Mix. The first one is, you could say that everything I am is thanks to Tom Mix. Because when I was growing up in the 70s, I grew up during the great nostalgia craze of the 70s. And in the 70s, everything from the 30s and 40s was new again. So you could be growing up and not know any better and see pop culture from the 30s and pop culture from the 40s. And it's resonating with you as if it's brand new. And the local PBS station at that time was running The Miracle Writer. It was the first serial that they ran on PBS, which was Tom Mix's last movie and his only serial. And it was like a door in my brain opened up. It's like, because until then I didn't care for Westerns. I didn't care for cowboys. And there was Tom. And I just thought Westerns were great. And not only that, it opened up the whole pop culture of the mid-century space for me. So you could say that all of my sensibilities and the way I think, and certainly the things I like, are all profoundly influenced by pop culture of the 30s, 40s, and a little bit of the 50s. So you could say I'm sort of a displaced person in time. But the other fascinating thing about that, and actually, you know, we were talking 2 days ago when we were, you know, doing a mic check with you. And it was only after I hung up that it dawned on me that Tom was born in Pennsylvania. So hardly the Wild West. And he was actually kind of born after the West was almost closed. And when he was a kid, about the same age I was when I saw Tom Mix in The Miracle Writer, Buffalo Bill Cody went through Pennsylvania with the Wild West. And Tom saw Buffalo Bill in the Wild West. And for Tom, it was like a little door in his brain opened up.
Yeah.
And he said, this is what I want. And this is what I want to be. And he actually went, and I just love this mental image. Tom Mix goes to his mother and says, I want you to make me a cowboy suit. She took stuff from the clothesline and put together a cowboy suit. I'd love to know what it looked like.
Yeah.
And he walked around with these, you know, he's like 11. And when he was old enough, that's what he did. He lit out and he went west. And I like to think with all the Westerns that I've written that I'm kind of Buffalo Bill Cody's spiritual grandson.
Yep.
Because Tom was influenced by Bill and I was influenced by Tom. I would love, you know, 30 years from now, somebody to be on one of these shows. You know, I was reading a book by this guy named Scott McCray. Anyway, they'd be Buffalo Bill's great grandson, I guess.
That is such a wonderful story. And we do have so much to talk about, but I just have to share a little a side story with you. So as you know, at one time I was on staff at the Autry, and one of the most pleasurable things was talking to visitors. And I'll never forget the day that this gentleman came in with his wife, and she was rolling her eyes the whole time he was talking to me. And he remembered seeing Gene when he was performing live outside and would do this a similar, you know, what he did in England. And this gentleman was 5 at the time, and he had a brother that was maybe 2 years older, and the two of them just fell in love with Gene. And the gentleman I was talking to, actually Gene took him up on the saddle and rode him around the arena. And he had spent his life just in love with Gene Autry until nobody wanted to talk to him anymore. He'd have these stories and they'd be like, oh yeah, so he's telling me this story. And he and his brother had finally bought tickets to come to go to the Autry Museum and do some other touring. And the brother died right before they made the trip.
Oh.
And I stood there, literally, I was definitely blurry eyed. And the wife is like, I'm walking away and I'm coming back. Cause you know, I've heard this story and I've heard this story. And I thought, you know, these are the moments that we all have had with somebody and somehow in our life that can change the direction or charter, you know, the journey where we go. And I think that that was what a story you just shared was just, that was just wonderful. Yeah.
I didn't meet Gene Autry. I was really lucky enough to meet Roy Rogers briefly. Yeah. I lived in New York. I lived in New York my whole life. I think for my sins, because I hate New York, and only moved here about 8 years ago. But in 1997, I had edited a book of essays about Dracula. And I was going to California to be part of a Dracula conference, believe it or not. It sucked. But I went to this Dracula conference. And while I was there, and it was in Los Angeles. And while I was there, I said I'm going to rent a car and go to Victorville so I could go to the Autry Museum, to the Roy Rogers Museum. And they said, you know, sometimes he's there. He's not always there. If you're lucky, maybe he'll be there. So I rent a car. I drive all the way out to Victorville. I go there and you know, you genuflect in front of the stuffed trigger and you look at the And I was about to leave because I had milked the thing dry. And as I'm walking out, there at the door is Roy Rogers. And he's sitting down on what's essentially a kitchen chair. And he looked up at me and I shook his hand. And he just had the most gorgeous eyes. I mean, he actually probably was the best looking man in movies ever. I mean, Roy Rogers is just fantastic. So I can say that I shook Roy Rogers' hand.
That's a great,
Sky. Sky, have you ever done any stand up?
No. People wouldn't sit for it.
When we were talking a little earlier, we talked about Tom Mix, and you have written the series, The Tales of Tom Mix, and last year, again, The Wild West Christmas. Do you have a copy you could hold up to the camera by
yourself? I wish I did. You know, I actually looked for the thing about it, if you write a Christmas book, you know, you give it to everybody at Christmas time. I was looking all over. I don't have any copies anymore.
That's okay. I am actually going to order one. It has a great cover, but that's okay. And do congratulations on the 2024 Spur Award finalist award for last year. Tom pervades. He comes into the book we're going to be talking about in greater depth for the whole rest of the show. But Tom kind of shows up in Targets West.
Oh, yes.
In an interesting way. Did you know all along you were going to have to weave him into the story? Or
no.
Did it just, okay.
No.
So tell us a little bit about that.
So Lucas Wheeler is the hero of Targets West, my new thriller, which is kind of a Western, but also a spy novel and a thriller and adventure story. And I wanted him to embody all of the best qualities of the Western hero. And I also wanted him to be very consciously connected to Western heroes of the past. And it was important for me, and you've read it, so you know, I do callbacks to all of these people. Like there's a callback to Buffalo Bill and there's a callback to Wyatt Earp. But I wanted specifically that connection to Tom because Tom was my connection to the West. So Tom is in there, and I know this is going to sound corny and kitschy, but I can't overestimate my debt to Tom Mix. If I had a way of putting Tom Mix in like every book, I would. So you know, as you know, there's this climactic moment where he's using Tom Mix's gun, and I wanted that to be Lucas's gun during that important sequence because I wanted it to call back to an earlier generation and an earlier iteration of the West. So and actually though, how it happened, it took me by surprise. That wasn't initially what I was going to do. Tom Mix was going to be one of the figures in that sort of arcade.
Oh.
But it dawned on me that the gun would be more effective because, you know, it's Tom's gun and Tom's bullets and Lucas Wheeler is firing it and doing good with it. So it's that continuity.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a nice tie-in.
Do you want to ask this question?
The question we get.
Oh, that question. 20 million friends.
Yeah, and then we're going to take a break. But we need
Bobby gives me prompts here. She wants me.
Because you know, I override him so often.
It's one of those intellectual questions, you know?
That's my forehead. Okay.
I don't ask intellectual questions, but this one is, can a Western be a thriller, and can a thriller be a Western?
It can when I write them.
There you go.
There you go. There is the answer.
I think if you look, I mean, there are a lot of people who have worked to make the Western more modern and contemporary. And the way you do that is by somehow transferring the Western either into a mystery story or a thriller story. And, you know, we see that with Longmire and things like that. And so, yes, 100% yes. I think a Western can be a thriller, and a thriller can be a Western. So,
I think in this book here, the Western is a thriller.
Yeah, we're gonna.
And a thriller is Western. So I think we've answered that question. Yes.
We are gonna step away for a moment. We do want to have you take a listen to a spot here from our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And if you are a writer, find out what they can do for you. When we come back, Scott McCray is going to read a passage from his new thriller, Western thriller, transatlantic, heart-stopping thriller, Targets West. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest Scott McCray, and we're going to talk about his book, Targets West. A great book. Isn't
yes. It? And I think, Scott, you're going to read a passage, right?
Sure, if you would like.
I would love it. So just tell us, set it up a little bit, and let's take a listen.
Everyone stay awake. So, why don't I just tell people what it's about briefly first, and then I'll jump in.
Sure.
So Targets West is a thriller about an American rancher from Wyoming, who's actually quite wealthy, named Lucas Wheeler. And he is selling Arabian horses to a Middle Eastern sheikh. And he's in New York on his way from Wyoming to London, and then on his way to the sheikh. And also in London, there'll be an international rodeo called the Golden Spur. And when he's in New York on his way on that first leg of his journey, the State Department says they think that the sheikh is involved in a terrorist plot. Could you please keep your eyes and ears open and tell us anything that is interesting? And the next thing you know, poor Lucas Wheeler is chased through New York, through London, through Saudi Arabia, back through London again. He's chased on everything from bicycles to double-decker buses to subway trains. The poor man is kind of like Wile E. Coyote in a cowboy hat, because he's always just barely hanging by the edge of his thumbs. And you know, he's a real American hero. And I was trying to figure out, you know, the other things aside from what I was talking about that made me come up with Lucas Wheeler. And so much of my formative years, like I was saying before, was you know, engaged in pop culture. I was reading the biography of Patrick McNee. Do you remember him from the Avengers?
Yes.
Used to love the Avengers because I love thrillers as much as I love Westerns. And in his biography, there is a photograph of him at a parade dressed up like John Steed. You know, he has his Edwardian suit with the Chesterfield jacket and his bowler hat and his umbrella. And sitting next to him, also in costume, is Lauren Green from Bonanza. And there they were at the parade together. And you know, Patrick McNee is in a Bentley and Lauren Green is next to him in a horse. And I was looking at that photo and I said, what is Lauren Green, but the opposite number really of Patrick McNee? You know, the Avengers is a quintessentially English hero, him, James Bond, people like that. And the Cowboys, quintessentially American hero. So why do the Brits have this sort of stranglehold on thrillers? We should put American heroes in thrillers, and we should put them in thrillers in the great tradition of, you know, people who are involved in international plots, who are not professional spies, who are just ordinary people. So, you know, there's a little North by Northwest, there's a little Avengers, there's a lot of Tom Mix. So it's all there. The passage I'm going to read, I don't think that any thriller is any good unless you have a compelling villain. So I'm just going to read the sequence where Lucas Wheeler meets the villain, the Sheik. So he's now in London and he is at the Sketch, which is a real restaurant in London. It's, I think, when I wrote it last year, it may have changed, but I think it's the most expensive restaurant in the UK and possibly the most expensive restaurant in the world. But, you know, if you're a Middle Eastern Sheik and you sweat oil, you can, you know. So, so here we are. So he's in the restaurant. At the end of the room, by a window, was a special table reserved for the Sheik. Nearby was a fireplace, along with two man-sized vases adorned with geometric designs. The table was empty, though two security men in dark suits stood at either side of the window. One of them approached and bowed. "Mr. Wheeler," he said, "I am Zugbai Besara. We spoke on the phone. How do you do?" "The Sheik will be here in a moment, if you would be so kind as to wait." "Sure," Lucas said. He approached the table and pulled a chair. "If you please, Mr. Wheeler," Besara said. "The Sheik would not appreciate it if you were seated when he arrived." "No?" "No," he said. "It is a sign of disrespect among my people. Remember, you have an audience with a member of the royal family." "Well now, Mr. Besara," Lucas grinned, "I'm royalty in my own way." "Sir?" "Well, I'm from Wyoming." Besara moved closer to Wheeler and bared his teeth. "Besara," a new voice said, "Mr. Wheeler is having a little fun with you. That is the phrase, is it not? A little fun?" Both men turned at the voice and the two bodyguards bowed low. "Your Majesty," Besara said. Lucas took stock of the man who had joined them. He was tall, much taller than Lucas, with a carved and wood quality to his features. His eyes were dark and penetrating under severe brows. The brown of his complexion contrasted with a curious line of blue coloration along the bottom of each eyelid, a testament to lack of sleep. His long nose was like a fox's snout, and the beard beneath his mustache was as pointed as his nose. His mouth was wide, thin-lipped, and unnaturally red, and the smile he gave Lucas was more than slightly cruel. There was a mole on his left cheek that gifted his features with an additional trace of malevolence, and his smile was offset by a slight gap between his two front teeth. Lucas instantly thought of a coyote that he had shot at the ranch years ago after it killed several of his calves. Kashif wore a white kandora that fell down to his ankles, the feet below clad in sandals. The robe, made of the finest French couturier, by the finest French couturiers, was of exquisite linen and slightly perfumed with cardamom and clove. Over his robe, he wore a black bishop or cloak that swirled dramatically about his person. Behind him were two additional bodyguards. "Sheikh Kashif," Lucas said, extending a hand. Kashif bowed but did not take his hand. "Mr. Wheeler," he said, "forgive me for being late. It is a bad host who is late for his own party." "Not at all," Lucas said. "I was just chatting with your aide." "Besara," Kashif said, "take the gentleman's hat." Lucas handed his Stetson Revenger to Besara, who took it with a bow and left. "Let us sit down," Kashif said. One of the men behind Kashif pulled out a chair for the man, who sat, his robes spilling over the sides in profusion. Lucas took his own chair. "It's a great pleasure to meet you at last, Mr. Wheeler," he said. "My people have greatly enjoyed doing business with you." "I learned a lot myself," Lucas said. Kashif fondled the quirt, holding it around in his hands. The Sheik acknowledged Lucas's stare and put it on the table between them. "It is my little toy," Kashif said. "Some men check their phones, Others fiddle with their watches. I hold that. He pointed to the court fondly. It was then that Lucas noticed that the middle, ring, and pinky fingers of Kashif's hands were all the same length. Kashif laughed. I see you're looking at my hands, he said, holding up both. The last three fingers were all the same length on each hand. A trait common in some members of my family. It does not affect my ability to use my hands. His smile was lupine. I can still grab things.
We like that passage.
Yeah, we have. In fact, we're going to read a quote at the end of the show, and most of what we're going to read was what you just read.
Okay, that was wonderful. Harry got me. That was wonderful. I love that line about coyote. I couldn't help but, I remember laughing aloud when I read it in the book, and I couldn't help but sort of laugh a little aloud this time, too. Scott, thank you for that. Was really fun. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think I'm just looking at time, and you know, why don't we just go ahead to the bookshop ad? This is where you can find many of the author's books that we have featured on Rendezvous with a Writer. And we're going to take a look at that. And then, Scott, when we come back, we are going to do more in-depth talk about Targets West. Stay right
here. I'll be here.
And we'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, Scott McRae.
You know, while you're holding that up, let me just say that the folks at Down and Out did a fabulous job on that cover. I just love that cover.
I love the cover. And it is the first in a series. Do you already envision what book two and its cover might look like?
Book two is already written. And Down and Out will be putting it out sometime next year, around the same time that they release Targets West.
Okay. And while we have the book cover that we're showing to the camera, tell us a little bit about Targets West. Where does that name come from? What inspired the title?
So the plot, as I said, is an American rancher gets involved in a terrorist plot against the United States. And it seems to me that West is under fire. And I don't mean the old West. I mean the collective West, Western civilization, is under attack. And I wanted to put the West, our collective West, and the West, the old West, together. And, you know, both of them are sort of in the crosshairs there. So Targets West is a play on being a target and both parts of the West.
It's brilliant.
You take us in a story from Harlem.
Oh yeah.
Well, you start at Wyoming, then we go to Harlem, and we go to Central Park. I knew more. I found out more about Central Park than I ever knew before. That's before we head over to London.
Yeah, lots and lots of locations, and they feel like you really know them as the writer. You really know these places you write about.
Well, so for many years when I lived in New York, I lived right across the street from Central Park. Yeah. So almost everything, well, first off, everything in the book, aside from the plot, is real. So every gun is correct. Every place is correct. Every location is correct. Because another thriller writer that I loved, aside from Ian Fleming, was Sax Rohmer, the guy who wrote the Fu Manchu novels. And he insisted that even though the plots are outlandish, and I'm the first to admit that the plot of Targets West is outlandish, that even though the plots are outlandish, that you have to have all the facts correct. Mm-hmm. And thriller writers and Western readers too, like authenticity. So I wanted to make sure that everything was authentic. But I used to walk from my apartment through Central Park to and from work every day when I was in public relations. So I got to walk through a lot of it. I also wanted, where that's the key action sequence in New York in the book. And I wanted Lucas not to be at too much of a disadvantage. So I put him in the only place with woods in New York, which is in Central Park. Yeah. And then, of course, I stirred the part by having him handcuffed for the whole thing. So there he is being chased by corrupt cops, spies. Making his way through Central Park, where he gets mugged, of course, while he's handcuffed and trying to get people to help him. And a gay teenager tries to pick him up, who actually turns out to be one of the most important characters in the book. And it's just sort of inventive. And I wanted people to have as much fun reading it as I had writing it. And I had a blast.
You know, Bobby and I were talking about it today. And I said, you know, Bobby, who's going to make this movie? I said, is this an Eastwood movie or is she still making movies? I said, who else might put this thing together?
You know, it's very funny you say that because my publisher at Down and Out, colloquially calls this the Clint Eastwood, the James Gardner is James Bond novel. Mm-hmm. And when I was writing it, it was James Gardner that I had in my mind for the whole thing. If you're reading Lucas Wheeler and you're channeling James Garner, that's what I had in mind.
That's yeah. The character.
If they make a movie out of it, I envision me, of course. But I would just have to, be a foot taller, in much better shape and good looking. But other than that, I'm perfect.
The first time I read the book was on a train, and I was on the train 24 hours going and then again coming and home. And so on the coming home, I read the book and couldn't turn out the light, couldn't fall asleep, had to just keep reading. And then I decided to reread the book because I really wanted to learn about some of the locations and some of the places that you describe. So for instance, we learned, tell us about Lucas Wheeler's favorite beverage. What does he like to drink?
Wheeler? Like his creator, Eagle Rare, and drinks Eagle Rare probably a little bit to excess. So I certainly, it's very funny you say this because somebody just emailed me, told me that they're reading the book. Somebody I don't know, just a reader. And they said, wow, I'm reading this book. You know, Lucas Wheeler's a brand snob. I'm like, I guess he is.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Well, and then in one of the scenes, and you did talk about Stan Goodrich a moment ago. That's in Central Park. You have to tell us.
He's an interesting character.
At the fountain with the mud turtle. Yeah. Tell us, give us a little Stan.
So poor Lucas is being chased by spies and corrupt policemen through Central Park with his hands cuffed behind his back. And he goes to a fountain near Bethesda Fountain in Central Park. And there's a kid in a bathing suit standing there collecting mud turtles. And Lucas goes to him and asks for help. And the kid, who's a gay kid, sees Lucas and says, oh, daddy, the daddy of my dreams. Thinks that this is the beginning of a great romance, which, Lucas is, wait a minute, I'm a middle-aged man. Thank you very much. And that happened, the genesis of Stan is many years ago when I lived in New York. I was walking through Central Park on a Saturday, and I stopped at the fountain, and sure enough, there was a teenage kid in shorts collecting mud turtles. And he was a really handsome kid, and he's covered with mud. I was just shocked at this. He's just covered with mud. And I walked up to him if that was California, I would have said, dude, what are you doing? But it was New York. So I said, young man, what is it you're doing there? And he just held up his hand, and there were all of these little mud turtles. And that image just sort of lodged in my brain. And I when I wrote the book, or when I was planning the book initially, the kid was going to get him out of the cuffs and help him escape from Central Park. And that would be it. And actually Stan comes pretty close to taking over the novel. When people, tell me that they've read it, they say, I really like Lucas Wheeler, but I love Stan. Is Stan coming back? And if I could just go off on a tangent for 1 minute, I was saying that I wanted to write the American equivalent of a Bond novel. So my like, so Targets West is a James Bond novel with a cowboy hero. But I wanted to improve on James Bond, because if you read the Bond novels, and you read all of them, there's not a lot there for him. I mean, he's an attitude and a suit. Mm-hmm. And you never know about Bond's friends. You never really know anything about his family. And Lucas is a widower who's still mourning the loss of his wife. He has no children. He's a man of deep and abiding friendships. And we meet many of his friends in the book. And he essentially takes this kid and adopts him. And there's a real father-son vibe there that I don't think you would get in not only a Bond book, but in most thrillers, but is something that you would find very frequently in Westerns. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about how many Westerns you've seen or read where it's an older man helping a kid become an adult. And I think that rite of passage from a childhood or from adolescence to adulthood is a key thread in Westerns. And I wanted that warmth, because it's really very warm and it's very sweet. And I wanted that warmth in my thriller, which you don't see in a lot of thrillers. And you know, Jim, you were asking before, can a thriller be a Western? I think a thriller can be a Western, but if it's really doing it right, it has a warmth that Westerns have and thrillers don't.
No. Mm-hmm. There's good point. Okay. You know, one more comment about Sam. You have him show up so unexpectedly. Yeah, Sam. Yeah. At such different times and places. And I kept, you know, through the book, I kept trying to get inside his head and figure out what he was thinking. I couldn't do it. I thought, this guy, you know, he's got a mind of his own.
He does have a mind.
You mentioned about brand snobbery, and one of the scenes that I really enjoyed was a short scene, but it was at the J.J. Hat Center. And,
which is a real place.
Yeah, I went online. It sure is. I think it started in 1911. And Lucas asks Stan, can you find me a hat place? And Stan goes on his phone and he, you know, does the thing, finds it, and they go. And it's such a wonderful scene. It's not very long, but we have Stan, we have Lucas, we have Lucas's right-hand guy who has
Pell Hornby, yeah.
Pell Hornby. And there, in the scene, Lucas decides that Stan needs to have a hat.
Every man needs a hat. Yeah.
Every man. And they pick the gentleman that's waiting on them goes and brings out a hat. And I love this line.
You had a quote there. You going to read that thing?
Yeah. So the salesman is showing Stan and Lucas the Pony Express hat. And he says, there are some things a man never forgets. His first kiss, the first car, and the first really good hat.
And you told us you had a couple of hats, right?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I have. So it's a sickness. Help me here. It's a sickness. I have 70 hats, which is amazing because I only have one head. But and even that's in question. But I have 70 hats. I have like, you know, 10 hats in the hallway closet. I have 10 hats in the bedroom closet. I have 10 hats in the guest room closet. And I have, now this is a sign that I desperately need help. I have hats in storage. Because you never know, I might need another hat, right?
I understand. In fact, let's go ahead and take our last break about our business, outwestshop.com. Everything
buy a hat.
We'll be right back with more with Scott. Don't go away.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out outwestshop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking to Scott McRae. Well, we just finished talking about hats.
I know. Oh, my gosh, Scott. I can't believe how fast the time went. And this has been so much fun.
Ask me back.
We will. And readers, you need this book. We can't endorse it enough. It's just
I need you to need it too. Papa needs a pair of boots.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you only have one pair of boots, I think.
Only one pair. I need another hat too while you're at it.
There you go.
So go ahead and let's you have
one more quote.
Well, you have a question. Oh.
Do you want a question? What do you want to do here?
What's the writing process?
What's the writing process?
Wrong guy is asking the questions.
I sit in front of the computer and I open a vein and so
yeah, we heard that one.
This is my serious answer. I do think that writing is a craft and a talent, but it's also a discipline. And I can't stand and I can't understand writers who say, oh, I have to wait for inspiration. And they're lying there like a shrinking violet. Oh, my inspiration. It's like, you're a professional. You get up at a certain time. You get to your desk at a certain time. And depending on the book. So, you know, I have a great publisher at DSP that publishes, you know, some of my Western series, you know, like the Ezra Flint books and the Tom Mix books. And, you know, those are a lower page number word count. So I have an idea of how many words a day I want. And the Lucas Rillo books are, you know, more novels than adventure stories. So they're longer, about three times longer. And I have an idea of the word count I want for that. And you sit down and you do that. And if you can do it, you know, from morning until one in the afternoon and you make your page count, fine. If you don't, you stay there until it's done.
Until it's done.
And you can always fix it. But real professionalism is the ability to do it when you don't want to and you don't feel particularly inspired. But that's what being a writer is. You know, Edison used to say that genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. And not only does that count in writing, but in everything that's... And in my case, I would say it's like... you know, one half inspiration and 99.5% perspiration. But I think real writers have discipline.
Yeah. Where can people find you? We're just looking. We're almost out of time. Where can people find you?
You can find me at scottmcrae.net. Please follow me on X at Scott McRae West and on Instagram at Scott McRae West. But, you know, Twitter or X is my home.
Yeah. And Jim, you have another quote.
Okay.
Okay. You have to read fast. Yes.
You know, this is our hero, Lucas Wheeler. He's getting a tour of the O2 Arena. Now, this is the big arena where we're going to have the big rodeo. And he says, the guide, a humorous woman who spoke in a dull monotone, painfully reminded him of a tour he once took at the Alamo. Much like his Alamo tour guide, she continued to point out the most amazing things in the flattest voice humanly imaginable. How do these types always get jobs interacting with people? He wondered. It's like taking a tour of the Department of Motor Vehicles.
There is light, witty humor throughout this book. We've been talking with our guest, Scott McRae, about Targets West, and we can't say enough about it. We thank you for being with us tonight. This was
episode
135, Scott, and you'll be getting an email later with all the kind of links that I know you will use to promote the show. And if you are listening tonight, it'll be up on various podcast platforms in a very short time. Look for episode 135, Scott McRae. Next week, we are joined by Don Bendel, and we will be talking about his book, Old Soldiers Never Die. And I know he's excited to join us, and we are excited to get into this book starting tonight. And
we're gonna go have some Eagle Rare.
Yeah, we're gonna go have three fingers meat of Eagle
Rare. Eagle Rare, me too.
All right.
I had to take out a small loan, Scott.
And Scott, we'll see you in Amarillo.
I can't tell you how excited I am about going back to the WWA.
Yeah, we are too. We are too. So do you have anything else, honey?
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep riding, and we'll keep
reading.
See you down the road.
Bye.